We all want friends, don't we? But how many of us want spiritual friends? Spiritual friendship is quite different to ordinary friendship. There are a number of differences, but let me just give you a few. Spiritual friendship is more diverse than ordinary friendship. Ordinary friendship, we tend to pick those to be friends who are like us. Same background, age, race, social status. But spiritual friendship's different, as we'll see. It's much more diverse, much more varied. Spiritual friendship's also more encouraging. It's not so much about getting one up on others, but helping one another up. And thirdly, spiritual friendship is more, what would you say, challenging than ordinary friendship. It's a friendship that always involves spurring one another on to greater spiritual growth. And I hope when you hear these characteristics of spiritual friendship that you kind of think, well, I want that, or I want more of that. And when we read these final greetings in this letter, Paul exemplifies spiritual friendship and shows us what it's like. And I hope that as we look at this, we'll have that desire created in us for more spiritual friendships, as he defines them here. And, you know, when you first read this, you might think this passage is just maybe a bunch of irrelevant names. You know, what's the connection to my life? I don't know who any of them are. I don't know anything about their situation. What can we learn from this? In fact, if you're reading through the book of Colossians, you might skip verses 7 to 18 and go straight into 1 Thessalonians. Well, I want to show you how perfect this ending is, this letter. It completes this letter about spiritual completeness by showing how spiritual friendship contributes to that completeness. And as we'll see as we look at this spiritual friendship, what we're actually looking at is Christ-like friendship. I want to give you three characteristics of Christ-like friendship today. And because I don't really want you sort of looking at your Bible, looking up, because there's a lot of reference work here. I'm just going to put it up on the screen. I've highlighted the particular parts of this passage that are helpful to each point. So, first of all, Christ-like friendship is extensive. So if you were to go through your friends and you're to make a list of them, I think you'd probably find that most of your friends are very like you. They look like you. They sound like you. They're from maybe very similar backgrounds to you. The same personalities even, the same interests, the same character traits. That's just very common part of ordinary friendship. And that's where Christ-like friendship is so different. It's much more extensive. It's much more varied. It's much more diverse. And I want you to see this in these verses that we've been looking at in a number of ways. So, for example, here Paul is friends with a range of missionaries. So, Tychicus, Jesus also called Justus, and Archippus were all missionaries and church planters, but they were in quite different settings. So Paul had these friendships with these missionaries in different parts of the world. And then he was friends with slaves. So Onesimus, now if you're familiar with that little Bible book, Philemon, you'll recognize this name, Onesimus. He was a slave, which is sort of the lowest rung in the social ladder. In fact, he was a bad slave because he had run away from his owner and had come into contact with Paul, had been converted to Christ, And now look how Paul describes him, our faithful and dear brother, who is one of you. So Paul has here befriended one of the lowest in society, one of the baddest in society. And then he's friends with prisoners. He speaks of two people, actually, Aristarchus and Mark, are fellow prisoners with him. He doesn't sort of put himself above other prisoners. He doesn't say, well, you know, I shouldn't be here. I mean, they, yeah, but not me. No, he's just saying, my fellow prisoner. We're all in this together. And he's friends with a failed friend. And this is interesting. He here speaks about Mark being with him in prison. Now, unfortunately, Paul and Mark had a fairly major falling out at some point in their life. They really diverged in what Mark's role should be in the Christian mission, so much so that they actually separated and went different ways. And it looked as if, well, that's that friendship over for good. But what this tells us is that God had redeemed that friendship and that Mark had come back on board with Paul, and Paul had accepted him back on board. And so here, friends who had fallen out are now right back together again. And you know, as I was looking at this, I was thinking, it's been hard to keep friendships going through COVID, hasn't it? Especially in church, we have many different opinions about, you know, how services should be, how we should reopen, and I think we've been largely kept by God, but there are many churches that have been very divided over this. And I think this gives us great hope that even if we have fallen out, even if we have disagreed, maybe very forcibly, that there's still hope of God redeeming these friendships. And that really there should be no such thing as a failed friendship ultimately in the church. So Paul gives him a second chance, brings him back on board, and befriends this failed friend. And then he's friends with Jews and Gentiles. Now, our culture is very divided, and politicians seem to specialize in dividing us up into ever smaller groups and setting us against one another. Well, in Paul's day, there really only was one division, Jews and Gentiles, Jews and non-Jews. And that was a massive division. But here, Paul brings these together. He sends greetings from Aristarchus, Mark, and Jesus. These were Jews. And then from Epaphras, Luke, and Demas, who were Gentiles. And so he shows us here, by just putting them all together, the power of the gospel to bridge cultural divides and gaps and to bring God's family together. So he's friends with all kinds of people from different cultures. Then he's friends with a doctor, Luke, who we know is one of the gospel writers. And he's friends with women. Again, in these days, women were really low on the social ladder. They weren't counted as reliable witnesses, even in court. They weren't allowed to testify. And yet here, in amongst all these names, Paul takes time to recognize Nympha and the church in her house. It appears that Nympha was a woman who had gathered a church around her. Probably Paul had ministered to them at some point. And here he gives her such credit and such place and such prestige, you would say, amongst everyone else here. So he's friends with women. So you put all that together and you see, don't you, how extensive Paul's friendships were. And in doing so, he's challenging us all. He's challenging us to increase the diversity of our own friendships. And he's saying, you know, yes, ordinary friendships, you're not that different from one another. But in spiritual friendships, they do best when they are with different kinds of people. The more different they are, the more difference it will make in your life. And anyone who's ventured out of their own bubble, their own comfort zone, you've found that, haven't you? It may be a bit scary at first, a bit risky, but you've found it's been well worth the risk, and you've been amply rewarded. And so when we see here Paul pointing out to missionaries and slaves and prisoners and failed friends, Jews and Gentiles, we're really being encouraged to increase the diversity of our spiritual friendship. So, here's a challenge to you. How about this week, you think, how can I improve and increase the diversity of my friendships? What can I do? Who can I reach out to? Even within the church, who can I welcome in? And in doing so, we're not just modeling Paul, we're modeling Christ. Because Jesus has the most extensive friend circle of anyone in the universe. You think about all the different kinds of people that Christ is friends with. It's just, there's no one excluded, is there? It doesn't matter what background, what age, what race, what social status, what personality. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you've been, what you've done or not done. It just doesn't matter to him. He's reaching out through the gospel. And you might say, but I'm so different. I'm just not like other people in the church or other people. It doesn't matter. All the more welcome. The more diverse, the more extensive, the better. Because it better reflects the heart of Christ. And so I hope you can hear that beating heart through the beating heart of Paul as he brings biblical diversity to you. And he says biblical diversity is welcoming, not threatening. So having been welcomed, what are the benefits of spiritual or Christ-like friendship? That's where we want to go secondly here. We want to see Christ-like friendship encourages. Christ-like friendship encourages. It comes alongside with varied and thoughtful encouragement. Have a look at how Paul does this. He encourages Tychicus by these words. He is a dear brother, a faithful minister, and a fellow servant in the Lord. He could have just said, Tychicus will tell you the news about me. But he doesn't. He goes further. He describes him in such a way that when Tychicus read it, he would say, huh, that's nice. That lifts me up. That'd keep me going if the Apostle Paul says this about me. So he encourages Tychicus. He encourages the Colossians in general. I'm sending Tychicus to you for the express purpose that you may know about our circumstances and that he may encourage your hearts. So he's saying, Tychicus, he's coming to you, and here's why I want him to come to you, because I believe he's going to lift you up. He's going to bring comfort and solace and strength to you. He'll help you live another day, keep going in your faith. That's why Paul sends him. He wants to encourage this church. And then he encourages Onesimus. And I think what's really important to note here is he doesn't say Onesimus, you know, the slave. He says Onesimus, our faithful and dear brother. His whole identity has been changed by the gospel. This is how he wants the church to think of Onesimus. No longer as a slave, no longer as a runaway slave, but as a faithful and dear brother who's one of you, same level. Same family, not an outcast. Then he encourages through greetings. He sends six greetings from six different people. So Aristarchus, verse 10, sends you his greetings. Justice sends greetings. Epaphras sends greetings. Luke and Demas send greetings. And give my greetings. That's not a common thing for us to say. We don't generally say that. We bring you greetings. It's a sort of maybe a bit old-fashioned. But the word here is very significant. The word for greetings actually is embraces or hugs. Paul is sending hugs to the Colossian church. And that's what they would read when they read that. They would just have a deep sense of being embraced by Paul and all these friends who were sending greetings. They were living in a hostile world where they were threatened for their faith. There was suffering ahead if they kept on believing. And he's saying, look, yeah, we know people are angry with you. We know you might even be at risk of being hit and assaulted, but we're sending hugs. We're sending hugs. Then he encourages through his encouragement. You know, sometimes you think leaders don't need encouragement. Or at least leaders don't admit that they need encouragement. That wasn't Paul. Because here he says, they, that's the Jews among his fellow workers, have proved a comfort. It's the same word as encouragement. He's saying, I needed this, and I got it. So if I need this, then all of you need this too. And therefore, I'm going to encourage you to be encouragers by the fact that I need it and received and benefited from encouragement. Then he encourages Epaphras, a pretty lengthy section here in Epaphras, who's quite involved in the Colossian church. He describes him as a servant of Jesus. He's always wrestling in prayer for you. You know what that word wrestling actually means? It's the word for a soldier on the battlefield in the heat of the battle. So this wasn't any kind of lethargic, half-hearted praying. This was battlefield prayer. He's telling the Colossians, see Epaphras, he is doing battle for you, spiritual battle. He's wrestling in prayer for you, that you may stand firm in all the will of God, mature and fully assured. Wouldn't you feel help to know that someone like Epaphras was praying for you? This wasn't just the kind of thing we say to one, oh, I'll pray for you. This guy was praying. And then he says, I vouch for him that he's working hard for you. This was encouraging to Epaphras, of course, but also encouraging to the Colossians to know that there were people in different parts of the world, especially Epaphras, who's just like living day and night for the Colossians, working hard for them. Then he encourages Luke, and again, you might think, you know, a doctor doesn't need encouragement. No, here he says, our dear friend Luke. That word dear means beloved. Could have just said Luke, but he doesn't. He says he's our dear friend. Then he encourages other churches. Give my greetings to the brothers at Laodicea, to Nympha, the church in her house. He's not just about the Colossians. He's saying, I want this encouragement to go further. Pass it on. Pay it forward. He encourages with God's call. Archippus, it would seem, was maybe giving up, thinking of packing it in. And so he says, tell Archippus, see to it that you complete the work you have received in the Lord. And the word for received means called by. So you can imagine Archippus is a bit down in the dumps. He's just wondering if it's all worth it. And so Paul comes alongside him, and what does he do? He reminds him that God has called him to this. This wasn't something he did himself, wasn't something Paul called him to. He's had God's call. Therefore, Archippus, get up, get going. God's with you in this. He's called you to it. And then he encourages with grace. And it's interesting, if you go way back to Colossians 1:2, he begins with grace. And he ends here with grace, doesn't he? His last words. And he's saying, you know, whatever else you get from this, get grace from this letter. Get the undeserved love and mercy and kindness of God. Enjoy grace. There's nothing more encouraging than grace. That's why the apostle doesn't think, well, I'll preach a sermon in grace maybe a couple of times a year. No, at the end of every letter, grace to you, grace to you. At the beginning of almost every letter, grace to you, grace to you. He sees God's people need grace all the time. We can never get enough of it. Because the more we get it, the more we see how undeserved this love is, how amazingly merciful his love is, the more we are encouraged, the more we are helped and supported in our Christian lives. So this calls us, doesn't it, to be encouragers like Paul. Now, I want to give you a to-do, if you will. How about every day this week you prayerfully consider who you can encourage? And you've seen it doesn't take a lot. You don't need to write a whole letter. Just a text or a call or a passing word. You can do it even here as you leave. Who can you see around you that you could just speak an encouraging word to? And in fact, if we could get into the habit of doing this every day, how many encouragements you would give out in the course of a year? Even if you did it every week, once a week, one text, one email, one call, one meeting, a few words here, a few words there, how much would build a culture of encouragement, which we all need, don't we? But of course, behind it all, behind us, behind Paul, is Jesus. He is the encourager. It's his heart we see here more than anyone else. It's Christ who is sending greetings. Christ is sending hugs to his people through his word. And so we can say Christ encourages his people through his encouraging people. Wouldn't you like to be used like that this week? That Christ would work through you, that he would pass on his encouragement through you to others. Well, you say, that's great. I need this courage put in me, this encouragement. But I want more than that. If this is to be a true spiritual friendship, it's not only to be extensive and diverse, it's not only to be encouraging and supportive, it's also to be challenging. We want challenge, do we not? That's what a true spiritual friend will do. He or she is tender, but also tough. And so we say, thirdly and lastly, Christ-like friendship exhorts us, it challenges us. It's not just an arm around the shoulder, but it's kind of like a poke in the ribs as well. It's saying, come on. You know, don't stagnate, don't plateau. Let's move, let's grow, let's flourish, let's progress. And again, we see Paul doing that in a number of ways. Of course, we've seen already he challenges the church to greater diversity. He challenges the church to be an encouragement, but he goes further. He exhorts them to diversity, to be encouragers. He exhorts them to suffer for the gospel. You see that in verse 10 where he mentions them being fellow prisoners. He's saying to the Colossians, look, this is possible. This is an option. This could happen to you, and I want you to be ready for it. Here we are. We're in prison. But look, we're still serving the Lord. We're still writing letters. We're still sending encouragement. And so he says, I challenge you, be ready and be prepared to suffer cost for the sake of gospel witness. And then he exhorts them to faithfulness and love. And this expression appears here three times in different ways. A dear brother and faithful minister, verse 7. A faithful and dear brother, verse 9. And verse 14, our dear friend Luke. And the word dear there means beloved. And so he's picking out these qualities in these people and he's saying, here is what it means to really be a Christian. It's to be loving and faithful, loving and faithful, loving and faithful. Go on and be like them. Go on and do like this. Be loving and be faithful. And then he exhorts them to welcome visitors. So they probably heard Mark and Paul had a fallout. And they might have been tempted if Mark visited them to be a bit standoffish. You know, he's been a disappointment. He's let us down. He wasn't a team player. He's a bit of a maverick. And yet here, he says, Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, you've received instructions about him. If he comes to you, welcome him. So he's challenging them to welcome somebody they may instinctively feel a bit unwelcoming to. And so challenges us. Who's failed us? Who's let us down? Who are we standing off from? Who are we avoiding as we come in and go out of church? And who can we welcome again? He then exhorts them to pray by using the example of Epaphras. He's always wrestling in prayer for you. He exhorts them to spiritual maturity and certainty. So he's saying, what's Epaphras praying for? Verse 12, that you may stand firm in all the will of God, mature and fully assured. The word mature there is the word for completeness. Remember, this is what this whole epistle is about. The Colossians had been invaded by people who were saying, you're not enough. You don't have all that you need to have. You need more visions. You need more asceticism, more kind of monkish self-flagellation. You need more philosophy. You need a hidden wisdom. You need some kind of mystical experience. And maybe then, you may be enough. And all the way through, Paul's saying, you're complete in Christ. And that's what Epaphras was praying most for them, that they would know their completeness and enjoy their completeness and celebrate that if they have Christ, they have everything they need. And so here he's saying, part of spiritual maturity is to have a deeper and deeper sense of how complete you are in Christ. Can you take that to yourself this morning, believer? If I have Christ, I am complete. Christ doesn't look at me as lacking, not even as 99% there, but 100% complete. That's a challenge, isn't it, to faith? So he then exhorts them to labor by pointing to the example of Epaphras working hard for you and for those at Laodicea and for those in Hierapolis. He exhorts them to remember other churches by showing how he does that. He exhorts them to persevere in ministry, as he did with Archippus. Don't give up. Complete it. He exhorts them to remember his chains. The apostle here is saying, don't think just because I'm an apostle and because I'm Paul that I don't feel this. I do feel this. And these weren't figurative chains. They were real chains. As he wrote this letter, he's chained to a guard. So he felt this very deeply, and he's saying, remember my chains. Remember, I'm not enjoying this. This is painful. This is tough. Please remember me. Please pray for me. And then he wraps it all up with these beautiful words. He exhorts them to remember grace, or to receive grace, with these final words, grace be with you. That's what he wants for them more than anything else. Grace be with you. Wherever they were, he wanted grace to be with them. Whatever they were doing, he wanted them to be thinking about grace, to be soaking in grace, to be enjoying grace, to take that little word and just keep expanding it in their lives, in their thoughts, in their affections, in their conversation. This isn't a word that you learn once and done. It's not a word that you fully define in a dictionary. It's a word that's fully defined by ongoing Christian experience, isn't it? I mean, you thought when you knew the Lord the first time, you thought, oh, I get grace now. That's just amazing. And then you look back and you think, did I know it at all? And then you think, okay, I've got it now. And then you realize, no, there's more layers. There are more angles on this. This is far higher, far wider, far deeper than I ever thought. I'm seeing how undeserving I am more and more, and I'm seeing how massively he loves me more and more. As I see the cross more and more as the ultimate expression of that, he's saying, that grace be with you. He's challenging them to receive grace. You'd think this wouldn't be a challenge, wouldn't you? You think, well, yeah, give me grace. But he realizes that at heart, we are works type of people, aren't we? We want to contribute. We want to have some level of earning, merit, or deserving. And so he's saying, just daily fight this battle to receive grace and to throw out every idea of merit on a personal level. So he challenges them. And indeed, if we want to be changed, we must be challenged. We're not going to change without challenge. That just doesn't happen. And so he's saying, basically, why don't you go and ask someone to challenge you? He's challenging them. And he's saying, go and find a spiritual friend and say to him, her, there's this area in my life I really want to grow in. There's this part of my character that I feel is really weak and ungodly. Will you challenge me? Will you help me grow here? Can we put together a plan maybe of study or practice that will exercise me in one of these areas? And what you'll find probably is as you invite that challenge from a spiritual friend, they will invite it from you. It usually happens that way. And so the friendship is greatly deepened and greatly enhanced by this mutual challenge. And as we put all this together, we see Christ-like friendship is extensive. It encourages and it exhorts. We ultimately see Jesus, don't we? His friendship is extensive. His friendship encourages. His friendship exhorts. And if you know the friendship of Jesus, ask for more of that friendship in your life, day by day. And if you're not a friend of Christ, or maybe you feel you used to have it, and that friendship's grown cold and distant, I hope this passage, these farewell greetings will welcome you to him. That they'll make you feel, I want that, or I want that again. And I hope that as you breathe in the atmosphere of these words, you'll see that Christ truly is a friend of sinners. What a friend we have in Jesus. What a friend. So let's receive Christ's friendship and extend Christ-like friendship in further and further ways every day.